This is Mike Chen, author of Here and Now and Then, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future, or maybe the past, or maybe somewhere in space and time. It's all very timey-wimey.
Scrolling for August 27th, 2019. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflo.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information this week, Chip. It is the end of August and September is arriving along with the celebration of the end of summer. This weekend is Labor Day weekend.
Well, for my community, that means we block off the streets and we have a block party, Steve.
That sounds like a blast. Growing that community, finding those times to come together, I think that's going to be thematic to our discussion this week.
Oh, I think so too.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You got a chance to see a movie that I didn't know that you were going to go see. This would not be on my list of Chip's movies, but you went to go see Ready or Not this week.
In fact, I didn't just go to this movie, Steve. I went to a preview of this movie.
That surprises the heck out of me. If you remember, we talked about this last week, that this was opening. This is the story of a bride, and she's marrying into an interesting family that runs a game empire, and they're going to play a game.
That's right. Think of board games and things of that nature. And this movie introduces us to, I think, what will be the 2019 Halloween song of the year, the hide-and-seek theme.
Okay, and you put this into the show notes, and you put it on the Facebook page when you found out about it. This is a good song about hide-and-seek, because that's the game that they wind up playing in this.
Well, it's kind of like a children's song, but it kind of has that creepiness.
It's got that old-timiness, too. It sounds like an older song that they just are playing because it's tradition, but you think that this is a new song. This is fun, this movie.
Well, we learn a little bit about Grandfather Steve, and Grandfather seemed to have made a deal to create his board game empire. And one of the ways that we're going to deal with that is once a marriage takes place, midnight at the estate, we play a game. And she places a card inside the box, and out comes what the game will be. And we learned it's going to be hide and seek.
But this is at a different level of hide and seek than you're thinking, because this is a hide and seek where she's hiding and they're trying to find her to murder her before sunrise.
Exactly. Exactly. And all the dark secrets of this family come out at that point. What we get initially, though, to set this up properly, was the husband-to-be keeps saying, we really don't have to do this. We don't have to get married.
You can back out anytime.
That's right.
Interesting.
And everyone comes up to her, says, you really don't need to do this. You don't have to get married. And she's like, no. I love him. I want to get married. And of course, this is what she gets. This is funny and definitely a horror film with a little bit thriller edge to it, with some gross scenes thrown in there. Very much like The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina.
Okay, you started with funny. Nothing in the trailer seemed funny, but there are certainly some unique moments in this that are strange enough that they might be humorous, right?
That's right. What we end up having is we have a lot of tense moments. I wouldn't say jump scares.
Okay.
But, there's always little twists in horror films.
Uh-huh.
And so we go through them. And all I'm going to say is this film ends with this house, this mansion on fire and everything going on. She is in her wedding gown, just blood all over her, not just a little bit. So they made sure this was nice and gory.
Like Ash versus Evil Dead amounts of blood, just blood and blood and blood everywhere. Is that this kind of horror?
Exactly. Okay. Smoking a cigarette.
All right, you got me.
Knowing she has survived.
Okay.
This is a fun movie. Certainly, if you don't see it at the theater, you can see it hopefully before Halloween. This is definitely up there. Certainly, you'd want to be an upper teen if you're going to watch something like this. there's not really bad languages or sexual situations, and certainly lots of, when I say silly gore, it is gore.
Okay.
And just, you know, a little all bit, right. Not quite jump scares, but certainly a story to go along with it. You will get wrapped up into it. I recommend this. I will say 65 out of 100.
That is really higher than I expected you to say for a horror kind of movie. We're not horror movie people, but I love that subgenre of horror that is funny enough, and silly gore is a great way to put this. Ash versus Evil Dead is so gory, but on a silly level instead of on a really scary people in peril kind of level.
And just the moral of this is don't make deals with the devil. That's the moral right there.
Aha. I look forward to that one. You also got a chance to see Overcomer. We talked about this one last week, too. This is another one of those movies from that religious group that puts out films with a moral twist, with a moral story, but a real human quality to these.
This is the Hendrix Brothers, and they have made a lot of films, certainly faith-based films. And this is one that is a beautiful story. I'm in the theater opening night. It's a good sized crowd, and this is an incredibly emotional film. In fact, I found myself even talking to you about this. Mm-hmm. It's kind of welling up with tears and stuff like that. So this is, for those who do not know about this type of film, this is a film that calls you out. I grew up in the South. I understand what religion means to that area and how they would like to show you how to use, you know, your morals to create the life that you want to have, mm-hmm. how we should work together. I think the most powerful thing that the Hendrix Brothers films do is they give you the verbiage mm-hmm. on how to communicate these ideas. And in fact, to prepare for this, you and I watched the scene where there's this gentleman who's in the hospital and the coach is sitting there having a conversation with him. And what you don't know is they happen to meet just by chance.
Okay.
So this coach is having, you know, set up to be the biggest winner next year. Everything's going to go well. And then the plant closes in the town. And all those dreams, the championships, the school, he gets a pay cut, all those pressures that you would have with a community that potentially is dying are coming upon him. But he gets called in and say, hey, Steve, we're going to go to the hospital. We know a person there. We're going to go check on them and make sure they're okay. So they go, and there's too many people in the room, which sometimes ends up happening when you're in a hospital. Mm-hmm. So this the coach kind of excuses himself, stumbles in this guy's room, and they create a friendship.
Hmm.
That friendship comes into play a lot because the scene we saw, eventually the gentleman who's on his ultimately on his deathbed basically says, who are you?
Mm-hmm.
Who are you? And this guy just has to define himself.
Mm-hmm.
He defines himself like we normally would. You know, what is our career? What do we do? What are our hobbies?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, ultimately he gets down to it. You know, he goes, well, you know, this is what I believe. This is my faith.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, but you listed it so far down from, you know, you named all these other things that you were to get down to here.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, you know, what if we stripped all those things away? He goes, where would you, you know, how would you really define yourself? And that's where you really come to understand what the strength of these films are. That, you know, life is about winning things and losing things. But your core to who you are should be the center of what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is just a powerful message that they bring to the table here. Ultimately, there's a lot of moral situations that come in here. There's an argument between the husband, the wife, the coach, and his wife. That argument, they do not come to an agreement on it, with the one exception. They agreed that they cared about each other and they loved each other.
Mm-hmm.
And while they may not see eye to eye on something, they created the verbiage on how to say, listen, I don't believe you're right. But I believe in you, and mm-hmm. and because of that, this is how we should approach this. There's a whole bunch of other things that happen. I really highly recommend this film. This is not the biggest budget film, but this is certainly one that, for many of us, will become very emotional
mm-hmm.
and watch it. You can see yourself in this film. I would say 80 out of 100. This is not a perfect film, but it doesn't have to be. This is really a question of asking you to look at your life through this story and, you know, just telling you to be the person you want to be.
That's, you know, I say this all the time, and I'm going to say it again. There are two words that I use every day in my life, community and perspective.
Sure.
And these stories about finding community and helping to find perspective, to look at something from a different aspect, to from a different angle, and maybe getting to a level of knowledge, a level of wisdom, that's what these kinds of tales can do.
Now, this is also a young person's story, which we really didn't go into her journey. But, you know, we don't have to. I'll just recommend that she does have a journey that's worthy of your time. This is a family film. So, you know, I wouldn't be afraid to have, an eight-year-old there, and I wouldn't be afraid to have grandma there. Wow. But it is very emotional, and certainly they did a bravo. Good job.
Wow. That is a huge recommendation for Overcomer from Chip. I do recommend that you go see all of these movies that group has put out, because they're special.
Well, they are. They're not the biggest budget films out there. You certainly should not be going there. But they certainly do ask you to question how you live your life.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly if you want to understand the American South, I would say there's no better place to start than their films.
Then you watched another movie that questions some of those same ideas. This one's called Accidental Courtesy. It is the story of Daryl Davis, race, and America. This is from 2016, and you just happened to watch this one, and it spoke to you in a different way.
This is a documentary. Mm-hmm. This is based on Daryl Davis. For those who do not know him, he is a musician. He lives in Washington, D.C. area, to give you a little Chicago connection. He was born in Chicago.
Okay.
So his father was a Secret Service agent. So being a Secret Service agent, the father got to travel all over the world. So Daryl Davis, just from the get-go, has this beautiful beginning, because once you travel to a bunch of places where you are not the person who is center, yeah, you're the outsider. You certainly get a different perspective on the world.
There it is. That word perspective, there it is right there. The more you travel, the more you see from different angles and you can understand at a different level. I think Daryl Davis has taken that idea of seeing from a different perspective and really run with it in this movie.
And in fact, when he was a young man, he joined the Cub Scouts. In fact, I'll tell you this part. He lived in Massachusetts at the time. He's the only black kid in the class.
Okay.
For his Cub Scout troop, he was given the flag to carry. And he's walking down the street during a parade, and people are throwing things at him.
Wow.
So he's telling the story. He goes, at the end of the parade, I looked at the scoutmaster, and I said, listen, people really don't like the Cub Scouts.
Wow.
And what that shows you, is demonstrates, is unless you're grown up in this culture, I mean, racism's learned.
Yeah.
And so he had no idea this is going on. And so he sits down with his mom and dad afterwards, and his mom and dad explained, like, what was really going on.
Wow.
And this is the deal. He goes, mom and dad never lied to me, but I thought they were lying to me. He goes, I could not believe that someone would hate me because of my color.
Yeah.
And so he was just in total denial. Well, this kind of story sets him up, because he spent his life going to visit hate groups, Ku Klux Klan, National Socialist Movement, and basically had conversations, face-to-face conversations.
One-on-one.
With their leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And he struck up friendships. And the deal was with this is that eventually many of them changed on how they thought about things.
Mm-hmm.
Many of these people are not the most educated people. They're the blue collar, they're the working class,
yeah.
Working class people. And they are put in positions because out of fear or something going on. In fact, there was a gentleman from Mississippi who came up, and he's giving a tour around Washington, D.C., and the gentleman said, you know, my dad was an abusive alcoholic, and I became an abusive alcoholic, and I joined this to basically have community. Not any different than the Best of Enemies story that we got earlier this year for the movie.
Right.
That gentleman, with his hate and being fueled by his addictions and things of that nature, eventually wound himself in jail. And he said, well, I'm just going to go in for a short time. It was actually a long stay.
Hmm.
But during that time, he had a change of heart. He recognizes that, you know, his conditions are growing up. and his fear, basically created maybe in his mind. And he found a community that to allow that to grow there too. I think the most powerful message of Daryl that he gives is you cannot cut people off. You may not believe that the person who is the president is the greatest person in the world. But there's a whole group of the population that is following this person and somehow is identifying with them. It's up to you to be the good person you are, to basically work with them. And, you know, and by the way, that group felt the same way about the last president or the president before that or the one before that. It doesn't really matter. But the deal is you can't just cut people off. Allow them the ability to have their voice, knowing that they're being heard. Over time, that could change. And that's exactly what Daryl was found. He found that a number of people he was who he was listening to eventually had a change of heart.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, what I also learned from this was there's more than one type of hate group out there as far as the National Socialist Movement. Their goal from one of the conversations was truly like to create another country or to take over this country. It was strictly like this will be our area. The Ku Klux Klan was very American. I mean, like America, America, America. They may have, you know, have racism as part of their tenet, but you know, the Constitution and working within the process was very important. This is just, I was like, wow, that's two different ways of looking at this.
Mm-hmm.
The one group that really did not listen to Daryl very well was in Baltimore. And Daryl's sitting down at a restaurant. And this is where you're going to really kind of understand how deep these challenges are. And these are community organizers, and they're Black. And Daryl is saying, listen, I've sat down with Ku Klux Klan leaders, and I've changed their heart. And I've sat down with racists and I've changed their heart. Well, these are Black men and they're living in Baltimore. And there's a lot of racial history going on right there. A lot of challenges for the Black community there. And they were very angry with him. Like, how dare you do this to mm-hmm. us? Because we're out there trying to work real hard and we're trying to, you know, right what they perceived as wrongs. And certainly the history of African-Americans in the United States is certainly a challenging history. How else would you look at a group that was basically pulled up from Africa and brought over and then treated as slaves and then freed? And then between Jim Crow laws and redlining communities and all sorts of stuff, I mean, the Civil War ended in 1865, but I mean, we're not even 200 years away now.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say even now we're still dealing with some challenges from that, some residuals from all of that. And in fact, there was an article in the LA Times this week that said, if you are a Black male, so if you are a man, your chances of dying are much greater than women. Mm-hmm. Typically, you know, we all die eventually at a younger age.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because men tend to typically take more dangerous jobs and any number of other things. So if you're a young Black male,
mm-hmm.
the number one cause of death that you're experiencing right now is by police officers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that should just make you just sit down and go, whoa,
mm-hmm.
whoa. This is a very powerful message. These guys were very angry at Daryl. And they're going, listen, 25 people that you turned over, hey, how great that is. You know,
it's not enough.
This is, we need to have things that are, you know, going to be a much grander level.
Right.
Now, I think both sides are kind of missing the point.
Yep.
I think Daryl was a little naive in thinking that 25 people is a lot of people. It is admirable. It is incredibly insightful, and certainly he took a lot of, when I say risk, he put himself out there to do that. And it shows that people can change. What a person believes at one point in their life and what they believe now can change. But I think the other gentlemen are also, while it's true that, you know, maybe Daryl could have done something more or differently or whatever.
Different scale.
not listening to his successes and recognizing that as strongly as they feel about their positions today, that doesn't mean things don't change. There are plenty of examples. What was acceptable for a man to say in the 1960s and what is acceptable for a man to say today? I'm not saying in 1960 that was acceptable. I'm just saying that certainly the mores have switched tremendously.
Yep.
And we are, majority of Americans are experiencing greater freedoms today than in the past. And my hope is that continues, And my hope is within our lifetime, you know, the violence that, these neighborhoods down in Chicago are experiencing can change. And my hope is that just like everybody else, that race will never really be an issue. We're all humans. The place that's worked out best is places like government employment and the military. There are, you name the color, somebody is leadership. There are generals and there are, we've had the president. So the idea that color should define you is not something that is as true today as it may have been at some point in the past. And my hope in our lifetime that just becomes, just kind of wipes itself out. Daryl, this is a fascinating study on his life. His life is the growth of the civil rights movement, but as from one man's perspective. And he is a crazy musician. I mean, just really, really good. And if I had a university or a platform and I could bring in a speaker, he would be a great speaker.
Once again, that idea of perspective, if you think that a group of people, if you can categorize an entire group of people and say, these people are bad, are wrong, and then you meet one person and have a conversation with one person, it will change the way you see your perspective on that stereotype, that racism of that group.
Well, that's what my conversation with nerds has really changed.
Yeah, it really has. You have really changed over the last 5 years talking to me. There's no doubt about that. Thank you, Mr. Fraternity Guy. Opening this week, we've got some interesting movies, some really, okay, we are in an era where there's a different kind of movie for the family, a different kind of movie for the adults, and there are really good movies that are really aimed right at us and our ability to see story. It's called Don't Let Go.
This stars Idina Menzel. And,
it's not Let It Go.
No?
It's not that one.
No?
It's a different thing.
This one has time travel, Steve.
Yes.
This one has a mystery going on. And this one looks so good.
I am so intrigued by this idea. The idea here is a man's family dies in what appears to have been a murder. He's a detective and he is very torn up by the loss of his family, especially his little niece, who is his buddy, who is the one part of his family who always called him on the phone, and he's really torn up about this until the phone rings and it's his niece calling from 2 weeks ago. So there's a time travel element right there. So already you've got me on this one.
And we've got cell phones in it too, Steve.
And there's cell phones in this. The actual use of cell phones for communication instead of, oh, we have to eliminate the cell phones for storytelling purposes.
This looks really good. I recommend that this is going to be what I'm going to watch this week.
I agree. I think I'm going to try to find a way to find time for this one. This is another Blumhouse release, for the producers of Get Out, those smart thrillers that we've been seeing the last few years. The second movie, I think, is your number two on this list. It's called Official Secrets. This is a very British story.
Based on a true story, Steve.
And paced on a true story as well. The trailer's a little slow, but I think that this is a really good story about the whistleblowers in the looking behind the scenes in the 2003 invasion of Iraq and seeing what was really in the headlines.
So what we get from this is a use of information, how we gather that information, and whether that information is even true. This is really good. So I've got two movies this week that I go, yeah, this is what I'm going to see.
I think that those are Chip's movies of the week. There is another one called Killer Man, or is it Killerman? This is the story of a New York City money launderer who who hits his head and has amnesia and is then told by all of these people who he is and what he does. And he has to go through the moral question of, really? That's what I do? That's who I am? And maybe he changes his perspective after this accident.
Well, yeah, this doesn't start Arnold Schwarzenegger, does it?
This is not an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. No.
Okay. Well, it starts off with a race through the city on a bunch of cars.
Yeah.
And it looks like just a traditional cop and robber type of movie. And then we have the twist. So this looks pretty good, too.
It really does. There is a stalker film. Actually, there's two stalker films this week. So all of you stalkers out there, the first movie that you're going to go to is called The Fanatic.
This is a cock-a-doodle film, Steve. Yes. It stars John Travolta.
This is John Travolta in his role as Kathy Bates in Misery.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. This is not the paper that I said to get, Steve. The smears, of course. Is there anything else you need? Is there anything else you need, Steve?
Right.
This is The Fanatic. John Travolta shows up. He doesn't look like he's John Travolta.
Right.
Because he's got hair.
He's got hair. That's really what really changes the look of John Travolta. He's this fanatic. He's this guy who's obsessed with his star and goes ahead and abducts him and threatens harm upon him. Let's put it that way.
Well, there you go, Steve.
Interesting enough, there is a second stalker film this week called Angel of Mine. This is about a young woman who is grieving over the death of her daughter, and she believes that maybe, just maybe, the neighbor's daughter really is her daughter.
What is reality, man?
That's where we get to on this one. Is this all in her mind or is this real? And I don't know which way the story's going to go. I really don't know from the trailer.
I don't know. Steve, what I'm really looking for is a film that follows a predictable trope.
Yes.
And hopefully they save the community center at the end. Is there one?
Yes. The trope film of the week is Bennett's War. This is the story of a discharged military officer who needs to ride motocross to save the community center.
Steve, the mortgage is due. And they're not going to pay it. They're going to take the farm.
Did they say that twice in the trailer? The mortgage is due.
And they're going to take the farm.
They're going to take the farm.
So through motocross.
Military and, motocross.
Right? And if he only can dance well enough, he's going
to
save
He could win the ballroom dancing championship and get the money to save the farm.
This looks like a trope.
Oh, it's a trope on a trope. Trope on a rope? Is that a thing? I've just invented a thing. There's another movie called Before You Know It. This is a pair of sisters who find out that their mother may not be as dead as she said she was.
She's not a ghost either, is she?
She's not a ghost, and Mandy Patinkin is in this, and he does not play the piano.
All right, so this looks like a low-budget...
Ready for Lifetime movie.
Yeah, sure.
It's got Mandy Patinkin in it. It's got Alec Baldwin.
Yes.
Remember Alec Baldwin? He's from Beetlejuice.
He's Donald Trump, right? Anyway, this certainly is our comedy of the week, Steve.
Is it? Is it really? That's as good as we got for this week.
There you go. So we've got a couple movies that look really good.
Yeah.
Some look okay.
Yep.
And then we got a couple of ones that, maybe they can save the community center.
Book it, book it, book it. Book it, book it, book it. Book it. Book it.
Brings us to our book of the week. About a month ago now, you sent me a message and you said, "Hey, Steve, I found one of those weird books that you like. You know how you like time travel and all that junk that I don't understand about Doctor Who and stuff? I found a book for you. It's called Here and Now and Then by Mike Chen." And I looked this up and I responded immediately, "Yes, Chip, you're right. This is the kind of book that I love. Let's read it." So we did.
We did read it.
And I contacted Mike Chen. I said, hey, Mr. Chen, that a stranger that I've never heard before, I'm going to read your book, and I would love to hear your voice on my podcast." And so he sent us a good morning.
Did he really?
Yes, he did.
How kind of him. All right, so this is a really kind of an interesting book. Let's set up the scenario going on. There's a gentleman who is a father. He's got a family, and he's kind of losing some memories of the past a little bit.
Oh, you're going to go in chronological order on this instead of the order of the book, huh?
Well, it doesn't really matter.
I see how you are. Fine. Yes, the setting is 1996, and then suddenly it's 2010 because we jumped ahead in the story. But in 1996, there's this guy who is living his life, having adventures that we won't mention because they're from the future. Okay, fine. And then he falls in love with a woman. They have a child. And 14 years later in 2010, he's losing his memory. He has memory problems.
Yeah. And so his daughter's kind of going through his belongings. Uh-huh. Daddy's very organized.
Okay.
And in one of the drawers, they find a book. And it's his journal. And basically what he's doing is he's writing down his memories so he doesn't forget, because these memories are slowly going away. Mm-hmm. His daughter says, oh my goodness, this, Dad, I didn't realize you were a writer. This is great science fiction.
This is the best science fiction I've read in a while. And I'm a huge fan of science fiction. I love Doctor Who and all of the Star Treks that have time travel in them that we've been discussing, because Mom is such a big fan of this kind of writing. You should have told us. This whole time you said you didn't like science fiction. You've been writing this great science fiction novel.
And she didn't realize it was a journal. It's a journal. Not his fantasy writing.
Because this man is a time agent from 2142. He got stuck in 1996 when his time travel device got shot, and he's been stuck in that time ever since, living a life with this family that he loves, mm-hmm. not being able to return to his time.
A man stuck out of time. Sounds like Buck Rogers, Steve.
This is almost exactly a reverse of that idea of a man out of time, but he's from the future living this life because he's stuck. He can't do anything about it. He's tried everything he can to get back to his time, so he's decided to break all the rules, fall in love, have connections to 1996.
Well, that's not the end of the story, Steve.
Uh-huh.
That's just the setup.
Yeah.
All right, so Steve, this man is also suffering, as many people do who go through dramatic situations.
Uh-huh.
And tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, he makes the assertion to his wife and to his child that these memory problems are related to his military service, and he has PTSD, and he's suffering from these effects of this military service. He's not exactly lying by saying that, because he was a time agent, you see, but
he was part of us. Military service.
A secret society sent back in time to make right what once went wrong. Kind of like Quantum Leap.
Exactly.
So anyway, he is there and...
Nerd.
I thought you were approving of my lifestyle. I'm going to call Daryl Davis. So he finally does have an encounter with another time agent who comes back for him eventually. This is 15 years after he was left for dead in 1996. They finally do come for him and bring him back to 2142. And he leaves a note saying, I'm going to seek treatment. I'm sorry for everything. I will never see you again. I'm going to go get treatment. Then he gets back to 2142, where he has access to all of the material from the past. Everything that was ever written, everything that was ever published, and he breaks one of the other rules of the agency and looks up what happened to his daughter. And he finds out that she suffered some mental scars from her father abandoning her, and he decides that what he should do is break another rule and contact her. He finds a way, because he knows computers so well from 1996 and on, he finds a way through the agency's firewalls, and he sends her an email and encourages her in the fatherly way that he can to be okay. And not he's not dead. He's not gone. He still can contact her. And he does so on a daily basis for a while.
There's the power of technology, Steve. That's think about that type of connect, that kind of technology and this, the ability to connect.
And that connection, that ability to connect with your loved ones is certainly one of the themes here, to care so much about somebody that you're willing to break the rules of time and quite possibly cause 15 paradoxes by doing this. He encourages her to do the things that he would have encouraged her to do had he been in her life.
That sounds like Don't Let Go, the movie that's getting ready to come out, doesn't it?
It is very similar. This is a very similar story to that movie that is coming out this week.
We think it is.
Uh-huh. He encourages her to find her way, to find the right her for her, and she does that. One of the things she does is she takes that journal and she publishes a story based on that material.
He doesn't send back the horsies to who ran first to find out, make $1 billion and make the guy.
No.
No?
No, this is not Back to the Future. He's not Biff.
No, he isn't. Well, that would be an easy thing to do, is just always have the Super Bowl winner, right, Steve.
Very simple. She publishes this work based on his notes, and the Time Agency, because they can see all things that were published at all times, see that all of their secrets have been revealed. This is a huge breach of security for them, so they decide the only thing that they can do is send a time agent back and eliminate her before she publishes this work.
This is like Eyes Wide Shut, Steve, isn't it?
How is this like Eyes Wide Shut? A secret society? Is that what you're going for?
They had a party, Steve.
This is nothing like Eyes Wide Shut. This makes much more sense than that. This becomes a race against time in a time travel story to help save this girl and to make this right so that she does not need to be eliminated. This is a brilliant piece of writing. I enjoyed every word of this.
And this is a really a wonderful piece. I would follow it maybe like Tal Klein's book from a little while ago.
Uh-huh.
This would make a great film.
I look forward to Mike Chen selling this one to get this made into a film. This is very cinematic. There is no doubt that a lot of Mike Chen's influence is Doctor Who on this. He mentions Doctor Who in this writing quite a bit.
Who is Doctor Who?
Uh-huh. And he actually uses the phrase, yes, who is Doctor Who? You're right, he is. He uses the phrase timey-wimey to explain the time travel here. This is directly taken from my love of Doctor Who.
Nobody likes you.
Definitely Mike Chen is a Doctor Who fan. I look forward to his next book. His next book is coming out in January.
Is it really?
And he's already promised us that he will give us a copy of it so that we can preview it before it comes out.
Then we are going to.
And we need to maybe make some email contact here and see if we can contact him in the future and get him onto the show to discuss this book and his next.
Well, that would be lovely, because yes, this is a wonderful read. I recommend this. We've had a lot of self-help books and different business books over the last few shows.
Mm-hmm.
This is certainly up your alley and just a wonderful book that our listeners should pick up and read.
Especially our listeners who know me and know how much I love time travel and are a part of my community of Doctor Who fans. This is a Doctor Who fan written book. I recommend this one highly. Once again, it's called Here and Now and Then. It's by Mike Chen. You can find it on our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. You know, we don't talk about food nearly enough on this show.
Steve, there's lots of people who love chicken sandwiches.
There's a lot of chicken sandwich talk this week, isn't there?
Well, I mean, they kind of like beat each other up. There's a lot of chicken sandwich fighting going on, Steve.
Chicken fight? Do I need to get on your shoulders?
That's right. We can take other...
Chicken fight.
That's right.
So set the stage for us here. Popeyes, they put out their very first ever chicken sandwich this week.
Totally unneeded.
The unnecessary chicken sandwich. That's what they're calling it.
Bojangles, which we do not have up here, has had the chicken biscuit, the Bo biscuit, baby,
uh-huh,
for a long, long time. They have really good chicken.
Lots of restaurants have a chicken sandwich. Popeyes had never had one before this week. They finally put together a chicken sandwich, a biscuit with chicken in the middle, And it became a huge sensation. No, it's hard to get one of these things. You can't go to a Popeyes and get a chicken sandwich sometimes.
Well, you know, life is full of disappointments.
So then online there became this Twitter fight, this chicken fight between all the fast food joints, right?
Oh, Chick-fil-A, Shake Shack, Wendy's, McDonald's. Do you have a favorite chicken sandwich that you would go to?
Oh, my go-to chicken sandwich is a direct tie between the Burger King, that long bun chicken sandwich.
Is that like the chicken parmesan type thing?
No. This is a fried chicken, peppery fried chicken with lettuce, mayo on a long roll.
Okay.
It's a direct tie between that and the McDonald's McChicken sandwich, which is almost identical in its flavor profile, but it's on a small, round bun. I had one of those yesterday.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did.
Did you?
I didn't go to Popeye's.
So, McDonald's, I do like their grilled chicken sandwich. Okay. It's actually very good. The Chick-fil-A sandwich is excellent. Oh, my goodness.
That's your go-to, isn't it?
Well, if it's nearby.
If you're not by a Bojangles.
Well, Bojangles. And there are no Bojangles up here.
No.
Bo doesn't come up north, I guess.
Bo doesn't know the north.
Exactly. Popeyes. I go to Popeyes once in a while. I would say once a month I do.
Okay.
You can buy the chicken without anything. Just buy the chicken. I like the spicy chicken. That's what Bojangles is, by the way. Okay. Spicy chicken. Wendy's has their spicy chicken sandwich. I enjoy that. I have that once in a while. I would say
I prefer their chicken nuggets. If I'm going to get chicken nuggets, I prefer Wendy's chicken nuggets. I don't really get their chicken sandwich.
Their spicy chicken sandwich is good.
Okay.
That's good. It's good. And
Welcome to Chicken Talk, everyone.
Exactly. I don't think I've eaten the Burger King. And in fact, I would say, is it a chicken breast or is it like a...
It's particle board. It is the same chicken. Just
it's the nuggets?
Yeah.
It's like they took the whole chicken beaks and all and just put it through?
And then put it into a right shape so that your brain thinks it's the right thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I prefer the chicken breast to that. So let's just say that I guess I will try the Popeye's chicken sandwich, although I prefer their chicken. But the Chick-fil-A and Wendy's are probably my favorites.
For me, I've been to Burger King so many times in the last week and a half because they got the Impossible Whopper 2 weeks back. I have now had 5 of them.
All right.
The Impossible Whopper. It's not nearly as good as some of the Impossible Burgers that I've had in other places. I actually like the White Castle slider, Impossible slider, better than the Impossible Whopper.
Now, I'm going to go ahead and just mention this.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. Was it Super Size Me? Somewhere I learned that McDonald's referred to their customers as users. So my statement is, fast food is, this is an intervention.
Yes.
And this is, we're going to talk to you a little bit about.
I like Burger King.
We're going to talk to you a little bit about fast food.
I had chicken yesterday from McDonald's, no less. I almost never go to McDonald's. I am a Burger King aficionado. I will go to Burger King 100 times before I go to McDonald's once.
Well, I can understand the flame broiled. Yes. Although
broiling beats frying.
We're in the Chicago area. We should at least mention Portillo's has a really good chicken sandwich.
There. That is a North Chicago thing. I don't go there. That's a North thing from you people in the North. I'm from the South. We don't even have a TH.
Well, they have a very good chicken sandwich.
Let's go to the ball game. Is that enough chicken talk for today?
Go Sox!
Tune in next week when Chicken Talk continues.
Exactly. It's like an NPR show. They've already picked us up, Steve. WTTW. Window to the world, Steve.
Chicken talk. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Well, you're wearing a crown. Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
Are you saying I'm Jughead to your Archie? Is that what you're trying to say?
I'm saying you're the Burger King.
Oh, my goodness. If you need more information, you can give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. You can find us on Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And you can ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
I'm the Burger King. We'll see you in the future. A couple of weeks back, almost almost a month now. Hughes texted me and
You're already, Steve.
Hughes texted me and Hughes told me to read this book.